Okay, so without further ado, I'd like to invite Steve, Max, and DK to come to the front of the room to do a little live PBJ session on the topic of, and this is going to help kind of give us kind of thrust into the rest of the day, on the topic of why is Silicon Valley currently missing Bitcoin? And then we can talk about and spend some time, you know, actually inserting Bitcoin into the conversation. So take it away, guys.
Yo, yo.
Hey, so same seats, huh? So this topic of Silicon Valley and Bitcoin, I think, you know, there's a question that we're often discussing kind of offline, and I think is a popular topic among Bitcoiners, which is why doesn't Silicon Valley understand Bitcoin? But what are they missing? How do we convince them? And I kind of sort of challenge the question to just kind of open it up. Is Silicon Valley missing Bitcoin, or should a new type of thing that's not so Silicon Valley be the place where the Bitcoin building emerges? Just sort of open that up as a question.
I like that question. Should we set some context, maybe with a little bit of history, like in 20?
Yeah, sure.
And then I think we can answer your question better. But like the first wave of Silicon Valley hype and Bitcoin, I think, was in the 2013 era. Because like pre-2013, it was a very small set of OGs who discovered Bitcoin and bought some or transacted with it, ran a node, mined.
And there were a lot of them in that era. It wasn't like this covert thing. It was basically every venture firm knew about it and was buying Bitcoin.
But like in the 2010 to 12 era, I think it was more like a, you know, global phenomenon within a niche group of people.
Drug dealers and
there was definitely like Wences got a lot of people. You know, one of the funders of this space, Wences Casares, got a lot of people in Silicon Valley, taught them about Bitcoin. I was at Google at the time, as was Matt. I think you maybe left, you had already left, David. But and it was definitely going through Google as well. But like the 2013 era, that's when VCs, I think their conception, entrepreneurs and VCs were trying to like make payments happen. But I think they viewed it as more like, oh, this is going to replace PayPal or Visa. But I get the sense that Silicon Valley at the time thought it was like a payment layer replacement and not this revolutionary new money that's like replacing the dollar. Which if you view Bitcoin in that lens, you realize it doesn't happen overnight. Like it's not like you just build a Silicon Valley startup and that happens. You have to like shake up institutions, and you really, and since it's not fiat, not declared by a government, it has to be grassroots and come from people. And that takes a long time. So there were a bunch of whiffs in 2013 wave of venture capital funded Bitcoin startups, because it wasn't ready yet for that use case. And I think there was a misconception. And then ever since then, there's always a better Bitcoin and those get funded. And I would call it a lot of distractions. But I think that, I mean, do you guys agree with that history and that context?
Yeah, I do. And I mean, I think I said this kind of jokingly, but in that early era, the people that really grokked Bitcoin were the weirdos. But like, and again, you know, there's a really interesting paper I've quoted many times. If you haven't read it, who here has read Why the Yuppie Elite Dismissed Bitcoin? This is like basically the best anthropological piece ever written about Bitcoin. If you haven't read it, like just read it. The gist of it is very, very, very simple. Again, to really grok Bitcoin, there's a lot going on. Some of it is complex. And so you need to be quote unquote smart or like do the work, right? So he has two axes. And one axis is like, how smart are you? Like, how much work have you done if you want to put it in there? The other axis, though, is how much do you trust the system? And that's a very, very different axis, right? So the people that historically, and I've seen this in my own circles, like I went to a much more sort of like insider school. My friends there still don't get it. They're smart. They're super smart. They still do not get it to this day.
Is that Yale?
Jail? You were much more likely to grok Bitcoin in jail than you were at Yale.
Somebody so embarrassed to say they went to Yale.
Seriously. Actually, quick funny aside, I have a theory. Highest expected value job of the last 25 years outside of like super hot startups at Google. Highest expected value job.
Vibe coder.
No, I'm going to go with volunteer on the Ron Paul campaign. I'm not even kidding.
Because you bought Bitcoin early.
Yeah, all those fuckers bought Bitcoin because they were young. They got it. But like, how many people took Bitcoin seriously? You know, like, or sorry, how many people even understood what the Federal Reserve is or what money is? Like, the people that were out there, I guess it was 08, like Ron Paul, like these people by most of society standards were nuts and are still nuts. It's like you have everyone else. Like, think about your daily, you're talking about this stuff and everyone's like, well, should we fund this thing or should we fund that thing, the economy? And then you've got this one old guy who's like literally just like shaking his umbrella into the air being like, we need to go back to the gold standard. And you're like, oh man, these people are not. And then you've got Warren Buffett. Everyone loves Daddy Warren. The guy, Warren Buffett, David Schallenmunger. And they're always sitting there, you know, gold. Gold doesn't throw off any cash. It, you know, flows, returns. Anyways, and we did a whole show about that last week. I won't rehash it. You should watch it on PBJ. But anyways, the gist of it is, unless you, for some reason, have been outside of the system, maybe you grew up, you know, in a country where there's hyperinflation, Wences, why was he the one guy in Silicon Valley that got it? Because he's seen his, you know, savings hyperinflate many times. Maybe, you know, you were whatever, just grew up outside the system, very poor in the US. Like, anyways, but if you grew up on the inside's worked pretty well for you. If you're from the banking class, done well in Silicon Valley, it's like you don't even think to question, like, is the water that we're in working or is it not? So that's why I think Silicon Valley, you know, didn't get it at first. And to be clear, some did, right? Like, some people bought a lot of Bitcoin. Founders fund about a lot. Peter Thiel, you know, he has the capability to kind of zoom out and see the guys that short the system, like hedge fund dudes, they understood what was happening. But anyways, and then I think to your point, Steve, you're absolutely right that like then Silicon Valley tried, you know, to pin on it what they knew, which is payments. And it's like, it will happen. I fundamentally believe that. We all fundamentally believe that. We get to zoom out. And to your point, protocols over companies, this is a cathedral. This is a century, multi-century long project, at least multi-decade long project. And if you don't come in with that view, you know, and you don't come in with a view of the history of the internet, how long that took, then you're going to miss it. So I think Silicon Valley just wasn't prepared. And then those that were have done very well. And then they keep trying to fit the payments narrative on top. And then you see people that make so much money. Like you see the Multicoin fund returning like socket numbers. And you're like, wow, I want some of that without questioning. Well, you know, is this really what I want to dedicate to my life to, dumping on grandma?
Just by options on Intel.
Yeah. Anyways, so that's my more cynical view. I think it's changing. And the last thing I'll say on that, though, is like, I do think Silicon Valley has a very important role to play in all of this. And I think that it's events like this to show people, okay, we're finally at a point where the things you want, payments, we're ready. And now you can fund those companies.
So let's get back to the original question, David. Let me make sure I remember it. Is Silicon Valley missing Bitcoin, or will Bitcoin just grow and thrive? It doesn't have to.
Yeah,
it's not going to grow and thrive through Silicon Valley, but elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, or you know, maybe I'll add a little more color with the context. Is I might make the claim that Silicon Valley has not missed Bitcoin, but Silicon Valley has a very different set of incentives that are not necessarily compatible with Bitcoin. We just think, oh, technology, it must be Silicon Valley, and I think. There's some things that Silicon Valley has gotten right about Bitcoin, like probably a dozen venture firms loaded up on Bitcoin, the asset, with their discretionary liquid 20% of the fund. But they didn't invest in a lot of companies. And I think outside of the ones that they did invest, like Coinbase, there aren't a lot of great successes to show monetarily in the venture capital style of investing.
So I think historically that's kind of inarguable. I mean, like how you framed it there is correct historically. So I think the interesting discussion and question is moving forward, will something change? And I think things will change. So I think you're correct that historically buying Bitcoin, holding it, that's been the use case and where you can thrive. There's not been a lot of great startups to fund the past 10 years, especially ones that are focused on Bitcoin. If you're like minting your own tokens and you give those to VCs, that's been incredible returns. I don't think super ethical, but certainly a good VC return. But moving forward, you know, what's transpired? Well, one, Bitcoin as an asset has obviously been tremendously successful the past 10 plus years. There's no doubting that. And everything appears it's going to just continue on that trend. Secondly, the tools to build on Bitcoin are dramatically better today than they have been in the past.
Definitely.
And we've seen that firsthand. Like, historically, it's taken several talented developers over a year to build a quality Bitcoin application. Now, people in this room are vibe coding with one shot vibe coding, and like 9 minutes later, they have a working Bitcoin application or a working application that integrates Bitcoin payments.
Matt is not the only one who's done that. Yeah. He showed a lot of people how to do it, but he's not the only one.
He gave me the one shot, and then I one shot it, and then it worked.
And if you want to one shot something, talk to Matt.
So I think that's transformative. So the next 3 years are going to be very different than the last 10 years, and that everyone in this room and millions of people around the world have the ability to create an application, integrate Bitcoin payments into it, and you don't have to be a superstar engineer to do that. So I think we're going to see hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people building millions of applications. A lot of them are going to be toys or kind of junk or learning experiments. That's totally fine. When you have that big of numbers, you only need a small percentage to actually be hits. And even if vibe coding today has its limits, that's totally fine. You can get to an amazing proof of concept. You can even get into production and allow hundreds or thousands of people to use it. So you can even get to product market fit today, single person with a vibe coder product. And then if there is a fit, great. Then you can hire good engineers to make sure it scales and is secure and things like that. So I think that's transformative, and the ability to add Bitcoin payments. We're going to see a lot more of that. And something David's always harped on over time is, like, Bitcoiners tend to build Bitcoin-centric applications, and then, like, no one's using it. But I think when you open it up to everyone, a lot of people, including Silicon Valley and big tech, who wouldn't identify as Bitcoiners, they'll build applications that are compelling for other people, and those applications just happen to have Bitcoin integrated into it. No one would call it a Bitcoin-centric application. And once we have that, we're going to have grow popularity, and then VCs are going to be chomping at the bit to invest.
And the only maybe thing I would push back a little bit, I agree on all of that, is on both of you guys, I think you're right so far with this idea that there haven't been good companies to invest in Bitcoin. Obviously, I'm talking my own book here.
Except for the ones you've invested in.
Yeah, exactly. But I will say that the way I think about it is, like, we've had years now, 5 years, startups, companies like Block that have built a lot of the open source community, a lot of people in this room that have built a tremendous amount of extremely important infrastructure. A lot of that's open source. And you've had companies like Lightning Labs, like Lightspark, that have built this really, really critical Breeze, Albi, you name it. All these companies that have built all this infrastructure that the vibe coding stuff wouldn't work with if you didn't have a library. Lexi's in the room, or they were in the room yesterday. So all of these companies, like, they've been doing, like, the super heavy lifting in the shadows. It's kind of like, I remember the old sort of, like, but before everyone hated him, the John Morant commercials, where it's always him in the shadow doing the work before you see him going out there and posterize people. That's the way I see what's happened the last several years with Bitcoin. That infrastructure had to exist before the application there. And I think now we're about to enter with vibe coding, all the new tools, the application layer. And yeah, there's going to be tons of those. That's when Silicon Valley is going to get in. But I still think that all of those companies have been building in the dark, also stacking Bitcoin, so be around forever, that you're going to see some incredible success stories from the infrastructure companies. It just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think that we have a lot of focus in our discussions, you know, offline and sort of in Bitcoin community, wondering, when is Microsoft going to adopt Bitcoin, or when is Google going to adopt Bitcoin? And I kind of think, like, that'd be fine if they do, but I don't think that's really worth a lot of our focus. And one of the questions I was asking Matt earlier was, what do you think is the non-Mag 7 that's going to be a credible number 2 to Block? So don't tell me Microsoft or Google, but tell me, like, I think Block has done a great job at moving it's a technology company funded originally in VC in Silicon Valley. But what is a credible number 2?
Replit.
To carry that could be. Yeah.
That's my answer.
That's your answer? Okay. And Amjad's a huge Bitcoiner. So
I'm not sure I understand. What's the number 2 Silicon Valley company that's going to embrace Bitcoin?
So, so, So Block has done a great job at being both a Silicon Valley company and being a Bitcoin company, right? With the funding spiral and all the grantees and everything, and, you know, Cash App, just Block cares about Bitcoin in a way that Silicon Valley mostly doesn't. And so what is going to be the second company, and how do you reach out to them, meet them, support them in doing that, as well as all the thousands of startups and the Vibe coders and everything? But instead of saying go higher, pick the number 2 and 3 and 4 and 10 that are sort of in the mini Block.
I'm going to go, that's a good answer. I agree with that, but I'm also going to go with Elon. Tesla X. Elon will understand.
He's going to get over his Dogecoin.
That's amazing. He will.
When's that happening?
Well, I mean,
I tried.
Hopefully we'll have a second shot here in a couple weeks. If you guys haven't heard, tune in. Type 1 Summit coming up. The way I think about it is, it's a process. You don't get there overnight, right? And so, you know, before you got, and this is probably true for you too, and I'm curious, most people in the audience, before you were like a zealot and fully in the Bitcoin cult, probably bought some Bitcoin, probably bought some shit coins. Over time, you probably realized, hey, what's this thing that keeps going up forever that everyone says is tulips, and then it's always going up forever? Maybe I should investigate. Oh, all my shit coins, that always all went to zero. Elon bought Bitcoin for Tesla, SpaceX, and personally, from my understanding, in 2020. Seen what happened. Smart guy. He understands thermodynamics, understands Bitcoin as energy-backed money. If I had to bet on who's going to really bring it mainstream, I mean, I guess it's probably going to be an X.
I like that answer. But by the way, when we do the show every Friday, it's a live show, and we always ask, solicit engagement, and that's what, with us sitting in the studio behind us and people text chatting with us. We love that. But now we have a live audience in front of us. So please, at any point, if you guys have a question or an opinion, feel free to raise your hand and speak up. Yes.
Nice move, man.
So, yeah, okay. So with Block, right? I mean, I've appreciated what, you know, Dorsey's been trying to do, keeping an eye on Bitcoin and all the innovation that he's been trying to put in place around it. Really appreciate that sort of ideology, right? What I've seen generally, and this is like when I say it's like the market is seeing it, is the stock price, right? And it's not reflecting in what's happening there. So part of what excites people when it comes to like innovation on Bitcoin, you know, whether it's DeFi, TradFi, whatever, like I'm agnostic. I don't care like what these labels are. Like if there is innovation on Bitcoin and I'm interested, or at least I keep an eye on it. It hasn't transpired, right? It hasn't paid off. So I'm just curious, sort of thoughts on, you know, we can take Block as an example, or any sort of broader thoughts on what could have been done better in that space, right? To attract sort of additional capital. Because everybody wants, as much as, you know, a lot of people here believe that, you know, even though Bitcoin's at $100,000, $115,000, we're still early. Right. But there's others who are saying, well, it used to be like $1,000 or a few hundred bucks only 10 years ago. Now it's 100,000, too late. Right. And they're looking for the next. And that's kind of where like shitcoins kind of find their market. I'm just trying to kind of like get some thoughts from you guys on, you know, what could Block do better? What would some of these other companies do better where they're like adding value to Bitcoin, but not become shitcoins in the process? Right?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And it also, it shows a very different strategy for Block and other companies. I think it boils down to like short-term versus long-term view and strategy. I think the people that work out of Presidio Bitcoin on Bitcoin, as well as Block, have a longer-term view and think that Bitcoin is a bedrock, a foundation that everything's going to be built on, but it takes time. And that might not show up in short-term financial results. And there remains a lot of skepticism within Silicon Valley about that future on Bitcoin, I think. So, and apparently in investors as well. Although, I mean, I would say for Block specifically, while Block does a lot of good for Bitcoin, it's still primarily Square and Cash App are the two businesses, and it's US dollars. I mean, the lion's share, I think Bitcoin is something like 3 to 4% of the gross profit of the company. So from a Wall Street analyst perspective, it's almost a rounding error still. So an investor in Block, if someone's investing in Block for Bitcoin, you have to be someone who would like work out of the city of Bitcoin, who really believes in Bitcoin. But I think it's a short term versus a long term view. And like my kind of disdain for pre-mine tokens and other shit coins is that it's indisputable that it's been highly profitable for VCs and founders who create those coins, but none of them have any lasting value. Every single one of them has lost value to Bitcoin and retail gets dumped on. I find it unethical. But I understand the rationale for why VCs haven't or have done that and not invested in Bitcoin yet.
Yeah, I think people are generally pretty rational about things, and it really comes down to what is your time frame. So if your time frame is like you're a public markets trader, maybe your time frame is, you know, hours or days or weeks. If you're a venture capitalist, your time frame is about 7 to 10 years. And you have to get that window right. And if your time frame, if you think it's going to play out over 20 years, it's just a no-fly zone. So don't touch it, right? And it doesn't mean that Bitcoin's going to take another 20 years from now, but maybe if you'd started in 2013 and you're 12 years in, you're feeling a little burnt, right? You're like, well, we know people who like they stuck their neck out at their firm and they made a bunch of investments and they're like going okay, but then their partners are doing these, you know, unethical things and they're getting all the returns. Like, why are we taking all this dead weight along? Right. So like the incentives and the timeframes really matter. But I also think the timeframes are specific to sort of the, you know, the market, what the market is doing. And you kind of can't fight gravity. I think the one thing that I just keep getting beat over the head with in technology is like, no matter how much you want something, the world has to kind of conspire to provide the opportunities for the things to exist. You can't just brute force it. The world has to assemble. Now you can do a bunch of brute forcing behind the scenes and then the world figures it out and then it's takeoff. That's kind of how most great things end up working. But you also have to recognize that like you're signing up for that brute forcing thing. Now I think we have lived through like what has happened in technology, like, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, like that was sort of tail end of the mobile wave. There was a lot of like vertical SaaS and SaaS companies. And like, that was a lot of what VC was excited about, was like SaaS companies. Okay, well, they don't really have a need for Bitcoin and that's where all the growth is. And they grow revenue and they grow share price. And so the incentives over the last, call it 10 years, have been mostly directed at increasing share price through, you know, vertical SaaS revenue growth. And that's like, Bitcoin doesn't really have a role in that. I think the exciting thing about this moment is that we have the new ingredients of AI, and it's going to fundamentally rewire everything. Like, there's nobody who's really, like, safe from AI unless they're already investing in AI. So that goes all the way from, like, the smallest startup to Mag 7. If you're a small startup with a bunch of good revenue, say, but you're not AI, you almost can't get funded. It's, like, sounds bizarre, but that's actually true. You can't be like, oh, we have 5 million ARR, but we don't have any AI story. They're like, okay, next. Right? They don't want to talk to you. So I think it's important to focus on what the new ingredients are and how they can enable growth in the future. And I think the new ingredients of AI mean that we cannot, like, you know, we can build things on our own hobbies with no venture capital and prove that something is exciting and valuable and needed and useful. And we can do it with Bitcoin if we want. And some people will figure out where Bitcoin is effective and we'll build AI. We'll build AIs with AI tools, and those AIs will need Bitcoin, not just like want Bitcoin or ideologically believe Bitcoin will be better in 20 years, but they'll actually need Bitcoin to receive payments. There's no other way to pay an AI except for the AI to hold Bitcoin, right? So because of KYC, all that. And I think that's a pretty profound shift. So in a sense, maybe we've been fighting gravity. We've been saying Bitcoin, 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 it should be there. Why don't people listen? But really what we need is we need the world to kind of conspire in a way that now it's just obvious because it's the only credible solution for the thing that we're trying to do.
Yeah, I would add a couple things to that. I mean, you know, I 100% agree with your point. Don't fight gravity, right? Like at the end of the day, one of my heroes, Buckminster Fuller, one of his great quotes is, don't fight forces, use them, right? And so I would say there are many dimensions to this question. And it's also a good reminder that capital, it's not, you know, there's no homo economicus, you know, like there are different pools of capital with different mandates, different people controlling them, different visions for what that can do for the world, frankly, different goals for that capital, right? And I think in general, people with capital want to make more capital for sure. But at the same time, you know, I also agree with Steve's point. Like there are people with different ethical standards, right? Like this whole like shitcoin thing to me is extremely nihilistic and also probably should be illegal, but that's a separate question. I'm not going to get into that, but you can probably guess my views. And so, I do think that, you know, there's different pools of capital where maybe it's like, hey man, already a billionaire, want to squeeze a few more out by like doing some payday lending. Like, I mean, that's your game, you know, so be it. It's not my game. There's a lot of capital that's not their game either. But at the same time, you know, it'd be easy to sit here and be like, why doesn't the world understand what we're working on? They're so dumb. And not dumb. I agree with DK's point. People are very rational. And I would say it comes down to strategy and timeline, right? So on the timeline question, you're asking me who am I bullish on in 20 years, Stripe or Block? All this not financial advice. Block. Why? Stripe, they're hotter in Silicon Valley. They've got, you know, all the sexy hires and this and that. They're going to make a lot of money on their Tempo thing, which by the way, when Lightspark or Facebook did that.
Block does sexy hires.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Block's great. But so do I think short term, let's say I'm a trader, comes down to traders versus investors and timeline. If I'm going to put money in the short run, do I think Stripe's going to go in there and just absolutely, you know, raid the cupboard, make a whole lot of money, just like the shitcoiners did the next 5 years? Totally. I think it's a great investment. Do I think that, but there's trade-offs, and that's the thing that everyone has to understand. By doing that, they're focusing on, they're going to raid the cupboard, make a lot of money in the short run. But when the Bitcoin payment network, and my thesis has always been Bitcoin is internet of value, it scales vertically, TCP/IP, HTTP, we're building the HTTP or SMTP on top of Lightning and all the, you know, edge use cases. When that time comes, and they've been raiding, you know, playing fiat games and winning fiat prizes, in 5 to 10 years, when everyone realizes Bitcoin is the internet, it's not the information superhighway, you got it wrong, it was the internet. Who do you think is going to be way farther ahead, be able to attract the best talent, know who the best talent is, have all the infrastructure ready to rock and roll? Is it going to be, yes, they're good engineers, but they've devoted, you know, 95% of their time building this thing that's going to die? Like, if you just think about it for a minute, like all the tempos that we talked about this on PBJ, like, think about it. They're building a database, just a database. It's a little bit of theater around it, but it's a database. Do you think audience is going to use their database? Absolutely not. Is when Google launched one, is Facebook going to use their database? Absolutely not. And then you're going to go through the wars of like, they're going to go through all the things we've gone through as Bitcoiners many times. And they said, well, who's going to market make between them? Man, wouldn't it be cool if we were in some interoperable network, which is how Visa emerged. And that's what Bitcoin is, internet. So in that time horizon, I'm betting on Block all day, every day, because first of all, I know who's finding the best talent in the world. And they're just so far ahead of the competition, it's going to be impossible. That's just my view. But that's a time horizon, right? The other thing I would say is you also, as an investor or a founder, we can be very ideological, and we're very lucky that many people in this space are. That's going to change. Just like the early internet, there was a lot of ideologues. Back when it was the well, it was better. But like eventually, you know, companies come in, this and that. But you also have to earn the right, in my opinion, to be an ideologue. You can't just die. You can't just like, oh, you know, we need the sort of largesse of the billionaires to help us out. And we're grateful that we have that. But like that comes and goes. And so from that perspective, if I just put on my, like, I want to make money hat in the public markets, you know, again, not financial advice, but like MicroStrategy is where it's at. Because you look at how things are going step by step. It's like, first you just buy Bitcoin and HODL. Then you realize, oh, we can speculative attack the dollar by taking infinite monopoly money, buying up the scarce asset. Wonder who's going to do really well in that 10-year horizon. MicroStrategy is like, in my opinion, the perfect money-making strategy. I'm skeptical on all the other companies. But, you know, the more you use that strategy of where we are with the forces of nature, which is accumulate the Bitcoin, the more you earn the right to do the cool things. And so I mentioned like all the infrastructure companies that I invest in. I think one of the most underreported stories, Block's in this case too, Tesla's in this case, is they all buy Bitcoin. And because they're ideologues, they're never going to quit. And so they're earning that right by doing really well, just by like, as Bitcoin goes up, right? Like, we're crazy. We think it's going to $10 million a coin. They may not ever need to raise again. And in that world, they've earned the right to do the right thing and to be there when the internet catches on. That's the way I do it.
DK, I just wanted to circle back to the point that you made about the intersection between Bitcoin and AI, just to call you that you go into that, because we're moving into the brainstorming exercise. So in terms of use cases or product ideas or anything that's come to you and feel comfortable to share what you feel comfortable sharing, what are some of the ideas and the intersections where Bitcoin meets AI that you think might be needed right now and in the future? And that question for all of you, I guess.
But I could imagine, you know, like right now, I'm working on a new idea that I just started this week, and it helps people with video generation. And video generation has a cost to it. So to use the underlying APIs like Gemini, you know, Seedance, Seedream, Kling, those are some of the popular ones. You have to actually pay to use those APIs. But if I want to present that to a user to be able to interact with on the web, I need to collect some money for that. It's just some idea I came up with. I started making this thing. How am I going to collect payments? Well, if they're in the US and they have credit cards, great. I don't care if they want to use Apple Pay or Stripe or whatever. I don't have that hard built, but I could imagine that like some people will want that. But I could imagine there's people in the world who might want to use this kind of service who don't have the ability to use the Stripe rails or they aren't on the credit card networks. So like, and that's just like a very concrete example where I want to provide this service to people. I don't know if they can all pay me in the traditional way. So I would like to also accept Bitcoin as a way to pay. And then they can self-select for whatever way they want to pay. Like in a sense, I like to try to be non-ideological about it, just with my own interest is like, hey, if it's helpful, use it. And I hope to discover places where it could be helpful and inspire places where it could be helpful. But I don't want to tell you, go build, you know, pay me in Bitcoin because I said so. Because otherwise then what's going to happen is somebody else will build a competitive service and just accept it over Visa network, right? So I want to like, in a sense, create moments to discover where Bitcoin really shines for being first required in a sense, or where the customers choose to use it compared to the alternatives. And I think, you know, that's just like a simple example because there's a cost and you can charge for it. So you can sort of bridge that. And because it's on the web, so it's not in an app store, so you can do that. But I think there's like, you know, there's all kinds of examples. I mean, I've said before, I think like the adult stuff and the gaming stuff are areas that like, that's basically how the internet got a lot of product market fit. Steve's about to.
We hear this from DK a lot.
Bitcoin Core V30.
It optimizes for the porn.
But I mean, it does drive a lot of innovation because it's like.
Can I follow the Twitter debate?
What does that mean?
It's part of the Knots versus Core debate.
Oh.
The Knots crowd saying that Bitcoin Core is optimizing for porn.
I learned something new today.
Like gambling and gaming drove a lot of early internet. I don't know if you remember it. Steve and I met when we worked on the mobile team at Google, kind of pre-Android. It was very early. And I remember that back in those early days, 60% of the mobile search queries were for adult content at Google.
60%.
And you don't think of Google as some adult type of service. You're just like, it's just Google search, right?
You think Google Maps queries.
Are you serious?
Damn.
Not that high, but there was a material amount of adult queries.
But I'm not advocating for that as a type of service. I'm saying that is just revealed preference. That's what people choose to do. If you put up a box, people choose to do that. And so, and I think that Bitcoin can support Bitcoin and Bitcoin payments, privacy you get, Lightning payments, is probably one of the like, it's not just a nice to have, there's more of a need to have in some of those situations. But I mean, we're just talking, you could have, you know, there's infinite creativity in the world. We're not going to design all the best ideas. But when you sort of open up the toolkit of anybody with an idea, even with no technical knowledge, just basically have an idea, you can now make it. And you can say, you know, copy the stuff from Matt's GitHub. And now you can actually accept Bitcoin payments, even if you don't really know anything about Bitcoin or Lightning, and you just want to accept payments. You can do that now. And that's a massive innovation. That's a massive change in the world. That's like, you're no longer fighting gravity. gravity's, you know, it's just chasing off the building ledge. You know, you're sort of falling, and it's like, yeah, the tailwind now.
I wanted to add one thing to that. So I agree with DK on the sort of gray areas of the internet. That's Silk Road. That's how Bitcoin got big in the first place. And I think that I'm surprised we need some more like marijuana. That's like an area they get able to do cash and expect some more of that happening. Torrents and some device torrents. That's an area I'm very interested in. But in terms of the more palatable things, two things I want to highlight. Number one, we've talked a lot about this digital life. In the future, if you really want to have autonomous digital life, Bitcoin's the only answer. So I think DK, Matt have a surprise I won't tell them about, but they have a brilliant idea that allows you to maybe fund some AI. So that's really cool. Second thing I'll say is I think people that just want to vibe code, but for whatever reason, can't touch the traditional rails. That could be because you live in the wrong country, like India, or is something that I actually am getting increasingly convicted on. I was put in touch by a friend. There's like this whole Substack world I wasn't even aware of. And I read, he put me in touch with someone from an energy Substack. Extremely brilliant. I talked to the kid. I'm like, who the fuck is this that knows all of this about energy markets? Is so incredibly intelligent. And the kid looks like 25 max. Max. Like for all I know, this kid's like 16. And I'm thinking to myself, that's right though. Like the smart, like think about this. Many of you guys in the audience, many people you knew when you were kids, like the smartest people. I mean, you were smart when you were 16 in high school.
As you get older, everyone looks really young.
Well, I felt old in this conversation. Kind of sucks. But anyways, such life. But increasingly, I'm like, well, think about you double that up. There's a kid in India who's 16. Like, why can't they build the biggest business in the world? They probably will. Can they use Stripe? No, they don't even have an ID for they're not legal. So I'm also very bullish on these sort of like NIMs that are probably like the genius kids. That's probably what's going to pop.
You had a question or a comment?
Here. Thank you. I think there was a, also fun. I worked at Microsoft and a lot of search query on thing that was also a significant amount. One of the things I've been thinking about is using Bitcoin as a payment method and like accepting Bitcoin as payment, especially for folks maybe don't have access to things like Stripe. And I was talking to somebody else about this week also. The fact that the Bitcoin asset value is so high and continues to go up, I think for normies like myself and others, it feels like it feels disincentivizing to use it as a payment method. You know, like US dollars are losing value every day. I'm incentivized to spend them. But with Bitcoin, I've usually seen the value of Bitcoin go up over the years. And I'm like, I don't want to spend this. I don't want to send this to anybody because it's, and I know that it seems like a time horizon thing also, right? Like eventually Bitcoin's going to be the thing that we use and it's not going to be dollars and it's going to be flipped on its head. But to get there, when I talk to people I know who have Bitcoin, none of them are interested in, and they're not part of this type of community. Like we're not Bitcoiners at all. Don't want to spend it because they're like, well, I'm losing money. Why would I spend this thing that continues to appreciate value? How does that change for like the average person?
I love this topic.
Yeah.
So I both kind of agree with it and disagree with it. I mean, I'd say that the number one reason people aren't spending their Bitcoin is because there's not really good reasons to. If you wanted, like, let's say you wanted VPN access or some kind of gray market, like you want to gamble. And that's really important to you. And the only way you could do it is with Bitcoin. Then even if you believe the number is going to go up and you think US dollars are going to go down, let's say you have like $20,000 or $50,000 of Bitcoin in savings. Great. Don't touch that. Just take a portion of your paycheck, $50 worth, turn it into Bitcoin so you can gamble your $50 for your entertainment value. So it's not like you have to choose between the two. So I think the number one reason people aren't spending their Bitcoin is there's not yet great ways to reasons to spend your Bitcoin. And then also I agree with everything you said about like longer term volatility goes down and it just basically can replace the dollar.
But think about, you can always, I think kind of to dovetail on that, you can always spend and replace. If you want to spend something that requires Bitcoin, you can always replace the Bitcoin with whatever else. But this is not a problem that's unique to Bitcoin anyway. You could, there's other assets in the world that you're like, well, I don't want to
sell my house because I think it's going to go up. I don't want to sell my Mag 7 stock because I think it's going to go up. There's all kinds of things that are probably going to go up because of how bad the dollar is. So the only thing you want, I mean, Bitcoin's probably the best thing to hold, but everything is a trade-off versus, you know, what else you could do with it. So just like take the whole sum of everything that you could do and hold almost no cash. I mean, I was literally having this discussion with my wife this morning. It's like, I never want to hold any cash. It's like, if we have a bill, let's convert it in cash just to pay the bill. Otherwise, you don't want to hold any cash.
That's actually that framing, I've heard other people say it, and I think it's a good intellectual exercise, which is if you believe that you don't want to sell your Bitcoin, you don't want to spend your Bitcoin because you think it's going to go up, then why do you have any dollars at all? You should be all in on Bitcoin.
Get on zero, baby.
And then when you need to pay a bill, you convert it to dollars. Now, that I would not advise people actually do that, because while I'm a huge believer in the long-term appreciation of Bitcoin, when you need to pay a bill in a week or a month, you know, like that holding the dollar is more, or whatever your liability is in, is more sensitive.
I want to add just two quick things in that. I think it's worth mentioning, we've talked about this a lot on the show, so you can go maybe find some of the old episodes of this, but there's Bitcoin, the network, Bitcoin, the asset too. I'm particularly bullish on using dollars that are interoperable with Bitcoin Lightning Network. I don't think it's going to be the stable coins. And those are intranets. Remember, Bitcoin is internet. And so to me, it could be Spark. I see a Spark hat in the audience. That could be the way it happens. Could be cashew mints. Could be a lot of different things. Maybe it's all of them, but all interoperate with Bitcoin and Lightning. Because I agree, it's kind of true. Like, why would you spend your Bitcoin? You probably shouldn't. Unless
also,
you
why would you
have
hold
to.
Cash unless you have a future liability?
Well, I'll tell you, the only other reason to hold cash, and I think this is sadly, it's a political issue, is just the tax treatment. Giant pain in the ass. Like, if there were no taxes, the world would be a very different place. But in that world, yeah, I mean, it's a pain. And there's companies like Strike that do help you, I guess, with some of that conversion stuff. But yeah, I mean, if you figure that piece out, I don't understand why you would have dollars. You know?
Yeah, I just have like a quick question. I used to work in Silicon Valley and now a Bitcoiner. So I feel like I've gotten a lot of anecdotal evidence of like my basic thesis is that people in Silicon Valley realize they are the biggest beneficiaries of ZERP.
Truth.
Yeah, whether that's like through first principles or instinctually or something. So they're naturally resistant to Bitcoin, I think, to some degree, because they are the very beneficiaries of the system.
I agree with that. I don't think it's not like intentional thinking. It's more just like if you were at Google or in Silicon Valley, like life is good. Things are working out well for you. Or if you're a venture capitalist or an entrepreneur, whatever, like here.
That's really close to the money printer.
Yeah.
You're close.
So it's not like I don't think people in Silicon Valley are like being intentionally evil about that. It's just things are working out. They're smart. They're doing well. And they don't really carve out much time. I think it's very typical. You're super busy doing your thing. You don't carve out time to consider Bitcoin. Like my own personal story, I learned of it in 2013, courtesy of Matt and one other person I've worked with at Google. So, you know, bought a little bit, read the white paper, but then I was never negative on Bitcoin, but I definitely, in 2013, I thought it was like this magic internet money and it went up and down. And, you know, I just moved on in my life, kept working at Google, doing other stuff, didn't even think about Bitcoin for 4 more years. And then I had left Google in 2015, and in early 2017, so I didn't have a job in early 2017.
And I was a professional athlete.
Yeah, I was a professional athlete. But I had time on my hands. So that time on my hands allowed me to deeply study cryptocurrency at large. And so 2017 is when I really firmly grasped Bitcoin in a way that I hadn't in the past. I've seen that. I don't think I'm unique. I've seen that pattern with people from Silicon Valley who end up having some time to think about this, learning about money, like the history of money, can be much more open to it versus if you're busy building or busy in the Google bubble or building a startup.
Yeah, I actually had the exact same experience, and that's around the time I met Steve. I also read about Bitcoin super early on, 2011, did not buy any, wish I had. And it wasn't until basically I like, you know, took, you know, a year or two off because I was living in Mexico. It was very cheap. And that's when I just had infinite time on my hands. And I just like read more and more, took programming classes, learned about like all of the beauty, realized this was an Einstein Newton level breakthrough of like taking the mental realm, connecting with the physical, all these things, energy backed money, all this stuff. But I didn't have a job. And I guess was extremely lucky, extremely fortunate. And I think for most people, I don't think I've ever met a single person, unless it's maybe like the chairman of the Federal Reserve or Warren Buffett, that has put 100 hours or even 10 hours into reading about Bitcoin that doesn't realize, oh man, this is big.
What's the litmus test? Do you have sort of your own calibration of how you can assess if somebody has spent the time or not?
Just talk to them.
I have a specific thing in mind that I can ask them.
Okay, tell us. he's agonizing.
It's like, do you know what the difficulty adjustment is? I think that's sort of like, once you come to that understanding, which like a lot of people who hold Bitcoin and believe in Bitcoin don't really understand. I think if you've done that, then I'm like, okay, you've probably done enough work that you can understand and explain enough about the specialness of this network.
That's a good litmus test. Because I do think that's like on a short list of incredible inventions and uniqueness of Bitcoin.
What's yours?
This is a good question.
Yeah, okay.
I haven't thought over it. I think that's a very good one.
For me, I come from a slightly different background. I was in energy and I still am. And so I appreciate it when it's energy backed money. And so I saw blockchain as an enabling technology, but like not the thing. And so for my industry, and this is like people I talk to from solar or in Texas, it's a lot easier to explain that. And this is something I always tell people, there's only one currency at the known universe and it's joules. Everything we've ever used as a monetary good is a proxy on joules, full stop. There is nothing else. And this is the purest proxy on joules of all time. Then you see the greatest minds in history, Tesla, Edison, have all seen that coming. That was a click for me. So for at least from people in that world, once they see it as energy money, then it's a different story.
Guys, I think we could probably go all morning here, but maybe just two or three more minutes and then we'll wrap up. I want to be respectful of your time.
Yeah. So it sounds like being unemployed.
Unemployed is huge.
It's the new Ron Paul fan.
That's our guidance to Silicon Valley.
Quit your jobs.
Quit your AI job.
Seriously.
Quit your best invest Google job. That I actually would recommend. Your Google resting investing. You've already got enough money. Quit. Study AI. Study Bitcoin.
Study whatever you're interested in.
So if indeed you need to be unemployed to get Bitcoin on a deep level, how do you expect that Elon Musk with his 10 companies or whatever is going to get Bitcoin?
Because he's way smarter than I.
Okay, let's leave it there. Thank you, guys. That was awesome.